Hello and welcome to Food Stuff. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And we're doing another fictional foods episode.
Indeed we are. And this time we're talking about Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
And or Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Really, really both.
Yes.
Yes.
Hopefully by now I've overcome my fear and rewatched it. And I know this because I am a person that exists that I have not overcome my fear and rewatched it.
Well, maybe by the, it's happening. This is all happening today. Yeah. No, you haven't.
Yeah. We didn't realize that this was going to be such a quick turnaround. I haven't. But hopefully we can have we're thinking about maybe a watch party.
Right. Well, because the thing is that Annie has not seen Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory since she was, what, like eight?
Eight. And it scared me so badly.
Which I think is fair. I mean, it's a creepy film.
Yeah. And I really do appreciate I like how I just said, yeah, like you're totally correct. It makes me feel validated that I'm not just a big coward. But I appreciate all the listeners who have written in and said that young Annie was on to something because Gene Wilder purposefully played the character that way to be deceptive. Oh. And like you can't trust anything that he does.
Well, I mean, that's just the character, but B, certainly neither of the movies have stepped back from that.
No.
They both have a very whimsically haunting kind of vibe to them. And I think we might be able to play a clip from that amazing Pure Imagination song that Gene Wilder sings in the original.
We'll begin with a spin, traveling in the world of my creation. What we'll see will defy explanation.
Oh, I fell in love with him that day. Creepy, creepy love.
Creepy, creepy love. Whimsically haunting love. I love that descriptor. I'm going to adopt that one, Lauren. Okay, so who is Willy Wonka? What are we talking about?
Willy Wonka is a fictional master chocolatier, candy maker, and force of chaos and imagination who appeared first in the book Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, published in 1964 by author Roald Dahl.
Right. Not Ronald, as I thought growing up.
No. Roald. it's a Norwegian word or a Norwegian name. It's both, I suppose. I'm pretty sure there's an extra, like, syllable worth of vowel sound that I'm not pronouncing correctly at the front of it, but...
But she is not saying Ronald.
No.
Which it absolutely is not.
It is certainly not Ronald.
No.
Dahl was born in South Wales of Norwegian parents in 1916. He went to a boarding school in England, served as a fighter pilot in World War II, moved to the United States to be a secret intelligence officer for the British government, and then started a family and a career writing short fiction for adults and later on children's books.
He settled down after his very exciting life.
I'm not sure if settled is the correct word. There's a lot of sort of like lore out there about Roald Dahl that he seems eccentric.
I never would have guessed. Never.
He survived a plane crash during World War II and just this staggering amount of family tragedy. And what was by many accounts both deeply charming and unpleasant.
Wonka-esque, perhaps.
Perhaps. His sense of humor, perhaps because of all of this and in case you couldn't tell, is quite dark. I think the movies have done like a perhaps too good job of conveying that. So, yeah, your fear is appropriate. Yes. And if I may offer a passage from the book that is a gentle example of this and also a pun.
Puns might ease my reservations for sure.
Okay. There's a lot of them. Roald Dahl loves them. All right. They passed a yellow door on which it said storeroom number 77. All the beans. Cacao beans, coffee beans, jelly beans, and has beans. Has beans, cried Violet Beauregard. You're one yourself, said Mr. Wonka.
Sick burn on Violet Beauregard.
Dang. But the book was a hit and would go on to be considered a classic.
Right.
Part of the book's fame, though, is certainly due to a successful movie adaptation released in 1971, the one that we have been talking about mostly here, starring Gene Wilder and featuring this grand scenery and moralistic musical numbers.
Moralistic musical numbers?
Be good. or a chocolatier will kill you and your family.
Okay.
Yeah, probably not. In the book, it's clear that they all survive.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, my child brain is like, did not pick up on that.
I don't know if the movie specified.
Oh, geez. Oh, geez. I have quite the imagination, too, so who knows? Who knows what was going through my mind? An interesting thing about this movie is that around the time it was made, the U.S. film industry was bouncing back from near collapse. Studios, which were the only ones that could get movies distributed, were more and more looking for outside funding. When the vice president of the Woolport organization, Mel Stewart, at the behest of his 10-year-old daughter, was trying to get Charlie and the Chocolate Factory turned into a movie, Woolport put him in touch with the Quaker Oats the Quaker Oats Company.
Huh.
Yes. They were working on a new chocolate candy bar, and they saw an opportunity. What if, in exchange for funding the film, Quaker Oats released their chocolate bar when the movie came out and essentially got a movie-length commercial out of it?
Oh.
Ooh, dollar signs, dollar signs, dollar signs. They would call it the Wonka Bar, hence why the movie is Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory and not Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, which I've always wondered
too.
About. Quaker Oats. Though Quaker Oats did finance the movie and a major candy company got its start from it, the Wonka Bar never came to fruition.
And not under Quaker, no.
Not under Quaker, yeah. They were never satisfied with the recipe, which I kind of respect. They were like, no, not good enough. They did, however, come out with peanut butter Oompas, which I only can assume are like Reese's Pieces, and Super Scrunch Bars. I have no idea what those might be, but maybe Crunch Bars.
Sure.
When the Wonka Bar finally did come out years later, it was from the Willy Wonka Candy Company.
And that is the aforementioned company that got its start under Quaker. Then they branched out on their own and were eventually acquired by Nestle in the early 80s. In addition to Wonka bars, Nestle released all kinds of candies, like Nerds and Laffy Taffy, Pixie Sticks, Sweet Tarts, and some Everlasting Gobstoppers under the Wonka brand. They've dialed back branding efforts, though, in the past few years, and I think it might be a technically defunct line that just kind of uses the Wonka logo on some stuff.
Oh. It reminds me of there was a Willy Wonka section in the Toys R Us that the now RIP Toys R Us, both in general, but also specifically the one on Times Square in New York had that big Ferris wheel, but there was like a Willy Wonka candy experimentation area that you could go to. And I'm actually not a big candy person.
Even when you were a kid?
No.
Wow.
On Halloween, I would get a bunch and sell it. Like, I was not into candy. I sold it at quite the premium, too.
Oh, I forgot about that, but yeah. I remember now. You were an entrepreneur. I appreciate it.
I made a lot of money. I like chocolate candy, but I like Willy Wonka candy. I generally think of as kind of like the fruity sour candy, and that's not my thing.
Uh-huh.
And I like Nerds, I always associate with Willy Wonka. Anyway, I'm getting away from the original point is that you could go and like make these candies, and I would always go and never eat them. I just like the process of, experimenting with candy. Yay, it's so bright and colorful and whimsical. And speaking of whimsical.
Oh, is that what we're speaking of?
I guess.
No, in 2005, Tim Burton would direct a very modern Tim Burton-y version of the tale under the title Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, starring, of course, Johnny Depp and Helena Bonham Carter.
Have they made many movies together? Just kidding. I remember this movie as one of two that I have fallen asleep during in a movie theater.
Oh.
Because Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix had come out the night before. And, of course, I stayed up until midnight reading it. And I was furious with Umbridge. And I was crying about a certain character who I won't spoil, even though everyone should know by now, that died. And I fell asleep during Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Oh, my goodness.
Yep.
Well, okay, so it's not a diss on the movie.
No.
Have you seen it again since then?
Nope.
Maybe we could do a
back-to-back.
Back-to-back Wonka watching party.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh.
Can there be popcorn?
Of course there can.
Awesome.
Okay.
Oh, and if we do this, there are a lot of real-world recipes online, and there are dinner party plans available. Roald Dahl published a not necessarily Willy Wonka-themed cookbook called Revolting Recipes. That is a great title, sir.
Yes.
And according to some numbers from Advanced tech services. It would cost Willy Wonka around $224.6 million a year to operate his factory, and like half of that would go to his flying glass elevator. And I don't remember this, but I really want to see the flying glass elevator.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's not an elevator. It's a Wonkavator. It can go sideways, crossways, diagonally. Yeah, uh-huh. Whole thing. Yeah, and it can burst through the roof and take you on a magical journey into space.
So it's like the TARDIS, but it's glass.
It's TARDIS-esque.
And it can't go back in time, I suppose.
I don't think it's a time travel thing. I haven't read the sequel to Charlie and the Chocolate Factory in a really long time.
There's a sequel?
Charlie and the Great Glass Elevator.
Oh, my goodness, Lauren. Have we found out the origin story? The true origin story of Doctor Who. And it's been there the whole time.
I can't say not.
I can't wait.
But I don't know when the first Doctor Who product came out, so I can't make any promises.
I feel like it was 1964, and I don't know why I think that. But sometimes a number just comes into my head, and that's the one. Anyway, as of last year, CityWalk and Universal Studios Orlando has a real Willy Wonka-themed chocolate factory called the Toothsome Chocolate Factory. And we saw this when Lauren and I recently went on a semi-work-related Disney field trip, uh-huh. Walt Disney World field trip.
Orlando.
And we went, of course, we went to Universal as part of that. And we saw it across the lake. It was a big steampunky-looking factory thing. We did not go in.
We did not.
But we admired it from afar.
Future field trip.
Future field trip, indeed. And they have freak shakes. They have the most amazing freak shakes.
What's a freak shake?
Oh, what's a freak shake?
What?
Oh, my gosh. It's like Frankenstein milkshakes. They're these huge milkshakes that have like a piece of pie, and on top of the pie is a piece of cake, and on top of there is a s'more, and it's on fire.
What?
It's a whole thing.
Oh, man.
I got one.
So it's sort of like a Bloody Mary
of
milkshakes?
Oh. Yeah. They are one of a very good case of a particular food phenomenon that I call Instagrammable food.
Oh.
Where it's mostly for the picture.
And shock value.
Yeah. And I mean, I got one in New York and I enjoyed it, but I shared it for sure. Like that we one among many is plenty. It had like chocolate chip cookies on, like instead of a rim of salt, it was a rim of whole cookies.
What?
Yeah.
Goodness.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. It's pretty good. But the pictures are really fun to look at.
All right. I'm going to look this up after the show. Heck.
You must.
Okay.
You must get to the bottom of Doctor Who and freak shakes. That's what we're going to be doing immediately after this.
Yes.
Okay. So that's sort of the overview of what we are talking about, the context of the fiction within the fictional food that we're going to discuss.
Yes, because we have a whole bunch of fun examples of fictional food from this media branding, and we're going to talk about those after we get back from a quick word from our sponsor.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
All right. At the very top of this, I want to mention I found a very, very exhaustive, amazing, stunning, quite frankly, list from Nerdist that had all of the candy in the original Willy Wonka movie ranked.
Ooh.
Ranked in order of, like, would people actually eat this? And it was a very fun read because there's so much more than we're going to discuss and that I could remember.
Yeah.
And it was just a, like, that's interesting.
A lot of the products are very questionable. And I also reread the book in preparation for this podcast. So I'm going to be chiming in with a lot of examples from that.
Yeah. Okay. So when the winners of the golden tickets first enter for their factory tour, the first stop is a room where everything inside is edible, and you see all kinds of interesting large-sized candies like lollipops, gummy bears, cream-filled mushrooms, and candy canes. And then there's those huge chocolate eggs later, too, It reminds me very much of Candyland.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that room that they go into is a whole landscape of candy. Candy growing on trees. The trees themselves are candy. In the book, there's also a meadow of soft, minty sugar grass that Wonka calls swudge.
Swudge?
Swudge.
That's a fun word.
It is. And there are buttercups that are actually
edible teacups.
Yes.
You can get things like this in real life, I believe, like drinking vessels that you can eat. I've seen that.
Yeah.
And I read an entire article about how to accomplish this, a garden where everything was edible. It involved a lot of sugar sculptures, genetic modification, and the miracle berry, our old friend the miracle berry. There's the river of chocolate.
In the same room, yes.
Yes. We heard from a listener about the trouble of filming this. But hey, it looks nice.
Oh.
In the Tim Burton movie, they used zero CGI for this, but 192,000 gallons of fake melted chocolate.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. The Wonka bar, of course. That's another thing. It seems like your basic chocolate bar, but you've got to include it. It's very key to the plot.
Yeah. The book branches out a little bit. The operative chocolate bar in it, the one that Charlie finds his golden ticket in, is Wonka's Whipple Scrumptious Fudge Mallow Delight.
Is there marshmallow involved?
There's no description.
Oh. The name is the description.
The name is the description. I can only assume that there is marshmallow involved.
I would guess.
Fudge and whatever Whipple is.
A tipple of Whipple, as they say. There's the flavored wallpaper that you can lick.
Oh, yeah.
And they all lick it, and it's hard, at least for me, not to think of how many people have licked it before them and how many will lick it after. And this kind of reminds me of those scented fruit stamp markers.
Oh, yeah. I didn't have a stampy version, but...
You had it, so you just colored and
just, yeah,
had the smell?
Had the scent, yeah.
I had stamps. Like, I don't know why I was stamping so many things, but I had stamps with grapes and they smelled like grapes, you know. Fun times for kids.
It's very official if you need, you know.
Yeah. I deem this grateful. and also scratch and sniff. It's kind of reminiscent of scratch and sniff.
Sure. Just lick and taste.
Lick and taste. Oh, and let's talk about lick and taste for a minute. So there's this other thing. About the wallpaper. In the movie, Wonka is describing the wallpaper flavors and says, lick an orange, it tastes like an orange. The strawberries taste like strawberries. The snozzberries taste like schnozberries. And if you're wondering what schnozberries are, well, they're not the fictional fruit you might have thought.
Or perhaps.
Yes. Or perhaps they're not. They might actually be penises.
Or testicles, maybe.
Or peni. The reason some people think this is because of Roald Dahl's 1979 adult novel, My Uncle Oswald, published 15 years after Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. It revolved around, quote, greatest fornicator of all time, time, time. Well, the echo is not quotable. That wasn't in there, but I thought it added to it. Oswald, who hatches a plot to make loads of money by selling the used condoms of famous men to ladies looking to give birth to famous kids, or, you know, just the kid of a celebrity.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. At one point, two of the characters are discussing how to get condoms onto less than willing partners. And one describes his method as grabbing hold of the schnozberries and giving them a twist or two. However, in a story published 16 years before Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, that was about gremlins, their primary food source is a sweet red fruit called a snozzberry. Maybe Dahl met this as some adult dark humor. Maybe he didn't. Who knows? Who knows?
I've got nothing there.
Yeah. Sorry. Had to bring it up. It was the first thing that came up. I was shocked. I was like, I think the headline was, this one fact is going to ruin your childhood. And I'm like, what?
I think that probably he was just being playful with a well-known term or a relatively well-known term.
Yeah.
I don't think that the original snozzberries were, I don't really know.
Yes.
Mysteries of history.
We shall move on. to non-melting ice cream.
Oh, yeah. One of Wonka's possible inventions mentioned in the book is a chocolate ice cream that stays cold without being in the freezer. As Grandpa Joe says, you can even leave it lying in the sun all morning on a hot day and it won't go runny. But that's impossible, said little Charlie, staring at his grandfather. Of course it's impossible. It's completely absurd. But Mr. Willy Wonka has done it. The book is really delightful.
It sounds delightful.
It's great. Anyway, Japan has also done it.
What?
While trying to figure out what to do with a bumper crop of deformed strawberries after the 2011 Tohoku tsunami and an earthquake, researchers were playing around with a strawberry extract, and they found that it forces the oils and water in cream to hold their shape.
What?
Yeah. So with the help of a pastry chef, they've created, like, popsicles that can withstand a hairdryer and soft-serve ice cream that will catch fire before it melts.
That's some end-of-the-world stuff right there.
Flammable ice cream.
That's like you wake up out of a coma and there's no one around and you go outside on the street and there's just this soft serve on fire and you know something's gone down.
And that something is food science.
Yes. Okay, the everlasting gobstopper. Okay, it looks like, and I'm not sure if anyone remembers these, but they were called rumble balls.
Rumble balls, oh yeah.
Yeah, oh yeah, Lauren knows. They were these brightly colored plastic balls, about twice the size of a softball maybe, and they had these equally bright but differently colored rubber spikes, but they weren't like
spiky spikes. They were kind of maybe pentagons.
Yeah, they weren't sharp at the ends. They were flat tops.
Totally.
Because it was a toy for kids.
Yeah.
And you'd turn it on and it would bounce around. That was it. That's all it did. Rumble ball. And I had one when I was a kid and my dog was so afraid of it.
Oh, no.
Just the sight of it. Like, I didn't even have to turn it on. She would see that bright green and pink thing and run under the bed.
Oh, no.
Yeah, yeah. But that's what the everlasting gobstopper looks like.
Yeah, sure.
As the name suggests, they purportedly last forever. The candy, not the rumble ball.
Oh, yeah.
And candy makers don't want them around in the book, in the movie, because if you've got an everlasting candy, it might curb your candy needs.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's why Wonka designs them in the book, because he's looking to create a candy that will serve the needs of children with very little pocket money.
Oh.
He's really trying to help people out.
That's nice.
Mm-hmm.
Japan has a 60-minute candy that's intended, its intended use is for dieters looking to stave off their cravings, but it was first made for fishermen who wanted something that they could enjoy hands-free.
Ah.
So that's kind of a real-life
parallel.
Yeah, who knows? We could extend that 60-minute candy one day. And there are also electric lollipops that fool you into thinking you're enjoying the real deal. So that's forever as long as it's working.
As long as you've got an energy source.
Exactly. Forever, an optimistic forever. That's what that is. And some of these examples we're talking about remind me of candy you'd find from the Weasley twins, Weasley Wizard Wheezes of the Harry Potter universe. And exploding candy is definitely one.
Yep.
Yeah, this is a candy you, of course, give to your enemies, I'm assuming, to injure or kill them. I don't know.
It's not specified how explosive they are.
It's not. And kids are vicious. Gelatin frogs is another that I'm guessing J.K. Rowling got inspiration from for her chocolate frogs. And I got to say, they sound better than the gelatin ones, but that's a personal preference of mine.
Sure.
I just prefer chocolate.
I mean, I like gummies, too. There is a whole great list, though, of Weasley-style sweets in the book. Luminous lollies for eating in bed at night. Stick jaw for talkative parents.
Mm-hmm.
Invisible chocolate bars for eating in class. Wriggle sweets that wiggle delightfully in your tummy after swallowing.
And hopefully don't burst out. Like an alien.
Goodness.
Sorry, I took that in a dark way.
No, that's okay. I mean, once you get the explosives in there and then the wigglers in there, oh, I don't know.
It's a bad day.
Right? and I don't think this is particularly an accident. J.K. Rowling has listed Charlie and the Chocolate Factory as one of the top 10 books every child should read. So I think we can safely assume that Dahl and that this story in particular is one of her influences. Also, there are whole fan theories about how George Weasley grows up to be a sort of parallel universe Wonka, or that, like, I don't know if time travel is involved or some weird stuff like that. That, yeah, that's totally George Weasley.
Oh, I have heard of that. I have heard that theory.
Like, up to and including whispers about how George's ear being injured in the Battle of Hogwarts is why Wonka is always saying that he's a little deaf in one ear.
Oh, it could be. I love fan theories like that.
It's delightful. And okay, one more connection here. The producer behind Potter property Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them is supposedly developing a Wonka prequel.
Where it's George Weasley?
Oh, I don't think so, but yeah, they could cast that one of those dudes. They could cast both of them. It could be like a Mary-Kate and Ashley thing.
Ooh, or...
or one of them gets killed.
And he takes his place.
Oh.
Call us. We've got ideas. We are full of ideas. Most of them bad. But every now and then there's a real nugget in there.
Speaking of ideas, there's mention in the book of a bunch of different products that are in development. Butterscotch and butter gin.
Ooh, butter gin.
Yeah. The Oompa Loompas get drunk off of butterscotch and sodas and purportedly also very much enjoy butter gin and tonics.
So it's like butter beer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Another connection. Is it alcoholic or not? Oh. Is it just magical? Who knows?
There's no way to know.
And there's also the fizzy lifting drink. You drink it and then you float. In the movie... this part scared the heck out of me because the menacing fan, Charlie, in it was his grandpa, right?
Yeah, Grandpa Joe, yeah.
They were floating helplessly towards it after they drink the stuff. And then Willy Wonka is so disappointed in Charlie, and my child heart was like, can't handle this.
Well, he stole it.
I know.
And he greased up the sides of the thing with his dirty, dirty child hands.
Charlie.
It turns out okay in the end.
I hope so. Hopefully this episode will turn out okay in the end. But first...
before we find out...
we have to stop for one more quick break for a word from our sponsor. And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you. All right, here's another one.
Yeah?
Super Vitamin Candy.
Super Vitamin Candy? What could that be?
In the book, Wonka has a candy that provides you with all the vitamins except vitamin S, which makes you sick, and vitamin H, which makes you grow horns on your head like a bull.
Of course. H doesn't stand for health. It stands for horns.
It stands for right.
That makes way more sense.
In the real world, the first chewable vitamin supplement that was aimed at children, called Chox, was released in 1960, just a year before Charlie and the Chocolate Factory published.
Connected? When I was a kid, me and my brother had the famous vitamin wars. It's famous to me, so it's not famous at all. But he and I preferred different vitamins, and my mom would make us take a vitamin every night after dinner, and I liked the Flintstone ones, and he liked the dinosaur ones.
Oh.
And we would always try to find my mom's list. Like, she couldn't tell that, oh, this is Annie's handwriting. We were always trying to, my older brother would just put he would take the Flintstone ones out of the cart when we were at the store and put the dinosaur ones
in. Wow.
It's always kind of candy. I mean, it's a fruity flavor experience.
Of course. It's candy based.
It was no super vitamin candy. We definitely didn't get any horns after we.
Well, I mean, the super vitamin candy wouldn't give you the horns. They leave out the vitamin H.
Well, that's wise.
Yeah.
That's wise. there's also there's a chocolate bar and a boy that are put in a television, Lauren?
Yeah, there's a whole part where the Mike TV, one of the children, sees a chocolate bar transported by television and then tries it himself and gets shrunk.
His name is Mike TV?
Mike TV. It's spelled T-E-A-V-E-E.
I see what he did there.
Yeah.
Okay.
and no, we don't quite have that technology yet. That's some solid, like, Star Trek transporter-style technology. And you can see our Star Trek episode about all of how that's pretty physically impossible according to current science.
Yes.
But there is some preliminary research into digitally teleporting scents and flavors.
Teleporting flavors and scents?
Okay. Say you have a glass of lemonade and you really want to share it with someone.
Oh, that's nice.
They would love it.
Yeah.
But they're across the country.
Oh, no.
What you do, you submerge a sensor that can detect the drink's red, blue, green color profile and its pH level. Then the sensor sends that information to a paired device, a special tumbler on your friend's end that's filled with just regular old water. But the tumbler is also outfitted with colored LED lights to replicate the look of the lemonade and with electrodes that will set off your sour taste buds. So your buddy can sip the water but experience the particular lemonade sensation that you started with on your end.
You're going to have a lot of trust in that friend is all I can say. Because I can see how this could go very wrong.
Oh,
a lot of pranking opportunities.
I hadn't even thought of that. I'm so earnest and so much an only child.
Siblings have taught me very much to mistrust anything like this. Just be careful if you ever have this opportunity. And perhaps don't prank people.
Oh.
Other folks, like my brothers. This is for you. And then there is three-course gum. And this is one that I really wanted to talk about because it's been in the news recently. That's right. The news.
What?
Yes. As you'd guess from the name, Wonka invented this to make you feel as though you'd eaten a three-course meal after chewing it. And even you get the nutrients as though you had just eaten a hearty dinner.
Mm-hmm.
Like most of his products, he's still tinkering with it. But that doesn't stop Violet Beauregard from popping a piece and turning into a massive human blueberry that, if I recall correctly, they just sort of roll on out of the factory.
They take her to the juicing room to de-juice her. She's fine afterwards, just purple.
Forever?
Yeah.
Forever purple? Well.
I think so.
I mean, that's quite a cocktail, a party opener, a conversation starter. Let's get it out of the way. I'm purple because of this Willy Wonka experience I had.
I shouldn't have stolen that work in progress.
But, well, yes. Hopefully she learned her lesson.
Mm-hmm.
And before things went terribly wrong in the original film version, Violet described the experience as, amazing, it's made of tomato soup, roast beef, and baked potato, and blueberry pie. Blueberry pie.
Yeah, it always goes wrong with the blueberries.
Oh, that's one of my favorite foods. I actually found a recipe for making your own at home if you're looking for a project. The FAQ about how to do it was entertaining, but totally enough for me. However, if any of you try it, please let us know.
Oh, yeah.
If you have tried it, you want to send us some, you know where to find us.
Yeah. And you can just Google three-course meal gum. It's on inliterature.net.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the reason I really wanted to talk about this is because science.
Science.
Science is working on this.
What?
Folks at the Institute of Food Research think that this might actually be possible with the use of nanotechnology.
Oh.
Nanotechnology. those teeny tiny millionth of a millimeter sized structures could time release flavors. The team working on this, led by David Hart, is loosely modeling it after preserves from the 17th century that used layers of flavorless gelatin to separate out the distinct taste.
Oh, huh.
The gel they are using is a bit more high-tech than what they had in the 17th century, unless Doctor Who was running around making gum. and it's called gelin.
Huh.
Another piece of this three-course gum puzzle comes from work out of Harvard University scientists on colloidosomes. We've talked about colloids a bit on the show, but here's a very, 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 very simplified refresher. they're a mixture of large, microscopic, insoluble molecules dispersed in another substance.
Mm-hmm.
Condensed version, colloidosomes microencapsulate things by building a stronger capsule structure around the second course and an even stronger one around the third, all of which are broken down with saliva. You ensure the release of three separate flavors.
At three different times, yeah.
Exactly. However, it wouldn't make you full or give you any of the nutrients. It'd still just be gum, but with three different tastes. Obviously, colloidosomes could be used for a wide variety of things outside of three-course meal gum. Dr. Hart got the idea for this as a way to motivate a new generation of scientists. And he reminds me a bit of Willy Wonka in his description of the gum, too. The mechanism exists, but the technique and flavor needs perfecting. Art imitating life, I tell you. So that's our...
It's our Willy Wonka episode.
Fictional foods Willy Wonka episode. Very fun to research.
Oh yeah, this was a good one. And yeah, if we figure out a way, we're trying to figure out a way to do like a shared viewing party, like remote viewing, where we can all kind of start up the film and watch it at the same time, and maybe there can be a reaction camera on Annie's face to see if she's terrified.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I throw popcorn in the air, as I've been known to do, have done on many occasions. And then I eat the popcorn because I'm not going to let it go to waste.
Of course not.
No, that'd be ridiculous.
So if we figure out a way to do that, we will absolutely let you guys know, possibly on the podcast, definitely on social media.
So keep an eye out for that.
Uh-huh. But in the meanwhile, this brings us to
Listener Mail.
Okay.
Yeah. I was doing a Willy Wonka thing and trying to capture some of that whimsy.
Yeah.
So, Drew wrote in, I revisited the banana episode this morning after realizing that today, which was April 18th, is Banana Day at Westchester University, my alma mater outside of Philadelphia. This is a campus tradition that started in 1996, and the Student Activities Council hands out thousands of bananas each year, as well as the coveted limited edition Banana Day t-shirt that students can win throughout the day.
Banana Day.
I know. Recently, the campus health and wellness staff have teamed up with the Banana Day to discuss healthy diets on campus. Banana Day also recently won an award for Best Campus Tradition from the National Association for Campus Activities. Thought you might enjoy hearing about awesome food-related campus traditions like Banana Day. Yes.
Oh, we did so much.
Yeah. I was definitely a college student that would skip class if there was a chance of a free t-shirt.
Oh.
Kind of want a Banana Day t-shirt.
We can't ask anyone to give up such a coveted thing.
No, we can't.
As a free t-shirt.
Mm-mm.
But if you know where we can get one.
I'm going to have to enroll. I think that's the only.
This is a lot. But okay. We'll talk about it more.
Okay.
Laura wrote, as an Oregonian, I really enjoyed your recent episode about James Beard, and I learned a lot about him that I didn't know before. As you mentioned in the episode, Beard and his family vacationed on the coast in Gearhart, Oregon. There is a brewery chain in Oregon called McMenamin's that operates a hotel in Gearhart, and they pay homage to Beard's legacy throughout the hotel. There are several artist renderings of Beard, including a painting in the bar of him picnicking and another painting in an event room of Beard hosting a cooking class. The latter painting features Beard using a favorite local ingredient in his recipe, razor clams. Additionally, McMenamin's hosts the James Beard Dinner every August at the hotel, which is a multi-course feast complete with wine pairings. The menu is based on Beard's affinity for the Oregon coast. While I haven't gotten to attend this dinner yet, I'm hoping to someday. James Beard has a great place in Oregon's history, but I'm not sure that enough people know about him. Thank you for bringing attention to such an incredible culinary icon.
It was fun. It was a very fun episode. It was our pleasure.
Yeah, yeah. And, I hope that you get to go to that James Beard dinner sometime. Let us know if you do.
And then tell them about us and get us an invite.
Oh.
Because I think after that whole cannibalism fiasco, I'm not sure we're going to get invited anywhere associated with James Beard.
Not if you keep bringing it back up.
I can't help it. I can't forget. Thank you to both of them for writing in. If you would like to write to us, you can do so. Our email is foodstuff@howstuffworks.com.
We're also on social media. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at foodstuffhsw. Also on Instagram at foodstuff. There's currently a lot of pictures of us outside of distilleries because we took a quick field trip up to Kentucky.
We took a foodstuff field trip and... as is tradition with us, we're going to miss the derby, the tentpole event.
Oh, yeah. It's happening tomorrow.
Tomorrow. But you can look forward to a lot of content that we got out of that trip that's going to be coming up in the coming weeks.
Really exciting stuff about bourbon. Yeah.
Yeah.
So check that out. Thank you, as always, to our super producer, Dylan Fagan, who's also a really good road trip buddy.
He is.
Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way.